Space Shuttle, this is Flight Safety. This podcast may contain adult themes and language. Listener discretion is advised. Please keep your hands and arms inside the vehicle while in motion. You are clear for launch.
The following paragraphs are from Chapter 14 of a fan fiction titled The Drought of Asphodel by today's guest fan fiction writer, Tea Time 42. Harry stared down at the little cauldron. He didn't know what to say. Emotions were surging through him. He was finally going to be rid of this stupid, painful, horrible curse of a potion, which meant he wasn't going to be spending as much time with Snape, which was good because most of their time together involved Snape whacking his backside. But Harry would miss Snape. He wouldn't miss the backside whacking, but he would miss the surly professor. Snape wasn't really bad. When he wasn't shouting in class or hitting him, Harry found his company not just tolerable, but agreeable. He was actually a decent teacher when he wanted to be. Harry had brewed the draught of peace perfectly with Snape's tutelage, and Harry wished badly that he could recapture that tranquil moment between them. He liked Snape's solid, strong, don't fuck with me presence. He had a firm hand and strict rules, but all that grounded Harry somehow. Harry absolutely believed that no matter how bad things got, Snape could fix whatever the problem was. Snape gave a damn about him, and that was more than most other adults had given him. Snape was smart and could be thoughtful, and Harry was shocked to find he was comforted by being near the man. Who knew? All of this was a revelation to Harry, but seeing as Snape couldn't stand to touch him, or even call him by his first name anymore, the feeling was obviously not mutual. And anyway, what did Snape want with an orphan fifth year? He had loads of students. Harry wasn't special. "I won't have to deal with this anymore," Harry said. "Imagine, I can upset you in class and not get spanked for it." He grinned mischievously, curious to see how the man would react. Snape stared at him with a stern expression, but Harry could see a touch of humor underneath. "I wouldn't count on it." Harry's mouth twisted into a bitten back smile. "This is great, sir," Harry said, staring at the potion in wonder. "Thank you for doing it, for working on it." "I'm glad to." There was an awkward silence. Harry felt like he should say more, tell the professor how much he had actually helped him this year. Snape kept him safe when the potion was trying to kill him, and he had actually been nice to Harry for the first time ever. He'd protected him and supported him, and all of that consistently coming from an adult was new and lovely. He wanted to tell Snape that he desired their little bond to flourish. He didn't, though. What he said was, "I'd better go get lunch." Snape nodded. "Yes, off with you. I'll find you when it's ready." Harry nodded and left. Snape watched him go and felt bereft. Just a few more days, and then Potter would be out of his hair. He wouldn't have to waste time paddling the boy for every stupid infraction. They'd been waiting for this all term. So, why was he not looking forward to it more? To the north, south, east, and west, four corners of the world. Greetings from the wild, arid desert of the American Southwest. I'm your host, Chaos Blue, and this is the Fanfic Maverick Podcast. Our special guest fanfiction writer today is Tea Time 42. She has been a member of AO3 since 2013 and has 40 fanfictions currently posted for fandoms like NCIS, Sherlock, and Harry Potter. As you may appropriately deduce from her screen name, Tea Time 42 is a lover and drinker of tea. She loves writing, playing video games, crafting, animals, and Mexican food. Hell yes! Tea Time 42. Welcome to Fanfic Maverick. How you doing?
I'm good, Chaos. Thanks for having me on.
You're so welcome. I'm so glad that you're here. I know we've had a couple of chances to chat on Tumblr, and now here we are talking on the podcast. So cool. I just have to tell you that, like, I love that you are a tea drinker and like a tea appreciator. I am too. I didn't even realize that was the meaning of your username until you gave me that information, and I was like, that's so cool. So I have to know, like, what is your ultimate tea drink right now?
I mean, I would say, like, my go-to, like, day-to-day tea is just, like, black tea. Because I don't really drink coffee because it doesn't like me. So I had to switch over to tea. Sure. Either black tea or, like, a chai is good.
Oh, aren't those chais amazing?
Yeah, aren't they? Oh, they're so good.
I will never, ever get tired of chai. Yeah, it's so good. And there's so many ways to, like, prepare it, I think. My brother, he showed up unexpectedly about 20 minutes before this interview got started, and he brought me this really interesting Chinese tea that he got from some unknown place. I don't ask questions anymore, but apparently it was harvested at the top of some mountain or something. I don't even know what it's called. I can't read the writing on the tin, but it says, I think it's like a red tea, maybe. Tasted a lot like green tea to me, but so interesting. Yeah. I was just like, oh my gosh, tea time would get a kick out of this.
Yeah, I do. Yeah, there's a million different kinds of tea.
Yes, there really are. That's super awesome. I love that. Okay, so anybody who's been here for, you know, short amount of time knows that we always talk about the history of fan fiction, right? Like your personal history with it. How did you first discover fan fiction?
Well, I first discovered it, I was looking for community for a show I was into, NCIS, which this would have been circa, like, I don't know, 2008 or so, around there.
Uh-huh, okay.
So, yeah. And NCIS, I think it's actually still on. It sounds like it's 25th season or something crazy like that.
Yeah, my mom is super into that.
Oh, really?
Oh, she won't admit it, okay? But she thinks that one guy, the old guy with the gray hair.
What's
his name? Gibbs, I think.
Gibbs. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, she has a major crush on him. She will not admit it to me, but I know. I know that's why she watches the show.
That is so funny. Oh my gosh, I love that. Yeah, a lot of people, back when people were like into the show more, I want to say in like 2009, 2010, a lot of people had crushes on Gibbs and Tony. Yeah, they were kind of like the power couple.
I remember back in the time frame that you're talking about, the mid-2000s, I remember NCIS fan fiction being a huge thing online. I read tons of it because it was just everywhere.
It was, yeah.
Yeah, so it sounds like you went searching online because you were an NCIS fan. And what did you find?
I joined LiveJournal. I had no idea about fan fiction yet. I didn't know it existed. I didn't know what it was. And I found these other fans on LiveJournal for anybody who doesn't know, LiveJournal is like where you can, it's literally what it sounds like. You would just post entries for, a day, and then you could click, next entry, and then whatever the author had decided to post next, that would be what you would see next. So people were putting fics up on this format where you would, read a little fic, and then the next chapter would be like the next entry, and then you would see the next page of it. So just by looking for community for this show, I was kind of just repeatedly kind of exposed to fan fiction for the show. So I ended up reading it and I was like, oh, this is pretty good. Like a lot of it was good. People would be like, oh, I saw last week's episode and I didn't like the way it ended, so I rewrote the ending and there would be a fic for it. And I got into it, and then the rest is history. I kept looking for fic after that. Yeah.
So when you first encountered like the concept of fan fiction, do you remember what you were feeling or thinking? Like, do you remember being confused by it? Like, what is this? Or just like overjoyed by it? Like, I'm just so curious what your first reaction was when you...
I think I was kind of confused. I was like, why are people rewriting the show? Like, why? why are people changing it if it's just already right there? But then
once
I started reading more, just because they kept like repeatedly showing up like in front of me because I was, following these fans, I was like, oh yeah, like why? Like, why does it have to be that way? Why can't it change? Why can't these two people be a couple even though they never would be on the show? Like, yeah, right. let's keep riding this train. Let's see what else is out there.
Was it mostly like Tony Gibbs fan fiction that you were finding?
A lot of it was Tony and Gibbs slash. Like, I would say like probably 95% of it was. Definitely Tony and Gibbs. Yes.
Okay. Yeah. That we were probably running around reading some of the same stuff back then.
Because
what I remember the most of was like, oh yeah, like Tony Gibbs was everywhere
at
that time on LiveJournal and also just on people's like personal fan sites, like their Shrine sites. I found like a bunch of stuff. And then, like, yeah, just, like, different archive places.
Yes.
Always, you know, Gibbs and Tony. Oh, my gosh.
it really was everywhere. And a lot of it got really explicit. And I remember, like, I just remember reading this, like, filthy stuff just on the family computer. And I was like, and in hindsight, I'm like, wow, I really hope I remember to delete my history because, wow, I didn't have my own computer at the time. I was just like, oh, what's this? Click. And it's just like looking back, like I would never do that now. Like reading it in my parents' living room. It's like, this is terrible.
Okay. So then you and I had some of the same experiences then, because back in the 90s, same thing. It was the family computer. Everybody is in the room watching TV and I'm the only one on the computer.
Right.
And for the life of me, I have no idea how I wasn't caught on the family computer, because anybody can walk up and read over your shoulder at any time. Like,
it's like, oh, what you reading? It's like, nothing.
Science.
It's his homework.
No, I totally get that. Like, you know, kind of a thing. It's so funny. So funny that that's how it was, because the kids these days will never understand because they can just read it on their phone in private, you know?
In private, seriously. Yeah. Back in the day, gosh, there weren't even cell phones then.
No, there weren't. There really, really weren't. So, yeah, we had AIM. We had AOL Instant Messenger, and that was
it. Oh, yeah, AIM. Yeah. Gosh, right?
Oh my God. So would you say that NCIS, was that your like first experience with fandom?
Yeah, it was.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So you kind of dipped your toes in to the whole LiveJournal fandom thing. What did your journey through fandom look like after that?
After that, I remember I found, because I was intrigued by fan fiction at this point. And then I remember I found a Lord of the Rings fic site. I think it was just kind of one of those sites that like one or two people had made, and it was like very basic, like HTML. It's one of those super early internet websites. And and I read this like Lord of the Rings fic. This person took like the Fellowship and put them in modern day.
Oh, fun.
Yeah, they all lived together like in an apartment somewhere in England, and it was one of the funniest things I had ever read, because it was just this Fellowship trying to like fit in with the modern world, or like the modern world in like, you know, whatever the 90s were. And it was so silly, and I was like, this is funny, because like, you know, Lord of the Rings, it's not a comedy by any means. So to like see these serious characters be put in these kind of like just silly situations was kind of really intriguing to me, that it could be, that canon could be changed so much.
Yeah, right.
While still kind of retaining like the core essence of the character, just putting them in totally different settings. And I was like, oh wow, like that's really cool that this is a thing. So that definitely intrigued me. Yeah.
Yeah, that AU realization where you're like, oh my gosh, you can literally put them anywhere and write about anything.
Yeah. Yeah, I love a good AU. So that was cool. That just kind of encouraged me to like further explore fan fiction. And then eventually I moved to fanfic.net and I started throwing my own NCIS fic on there. And I was posting my own NCIS fics on LiveJournal. And what was very lucky for me was that the people whose fics I had really started loving and liking and following, they were commenting positively on my fics, my fics were like objectively not good, because I was, you know, I was a beginner writer. I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't know anything about like world building or like, you know, character, you know, dynamics or like the depth, you know, that was required for character emotions. So to hear like these authors who in my mind were like so good to like be encouraging, like that was probably the best intro to fic writing that like I could have gotten. So that was really I think I was lucky because not everybody has like those super positive introductions.
Yes, yes. You know, I'm so glad that that was your experience. It reminds me of something that I was reading on Tumblr today. It was this little debate on Tumblr between a couple of different users, and they were debating the concept of constructive criticism and is it appropriate to constructively criticize somebody's fan fiction or is it not? You know, and it was kind of a back and forth kind of a thing. And I think that one of the users that was, you know, commenting on this whole thing was just saying, you know, you don't know who you're talking to on the other end of the computer, right? When you're commenting on somebody's work. So you don't know if they're like a kid, an adult. You don't know if they're just starting out with writing or if they've been writing for 20 years. You have no idea. And so like probably it's best, right? It's best practice to just be encouraging to people because you have no idea where they're at in their journey and no idea what your words could, how that could affect them, I guess, is it's basically the gist, right? And it sounds like for you and your past experience, like people's kind words and their kind encouragement of you, that seems to have had an impact on you developed.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, like I think if my first attempts had been like crapped on, I probably wouldn't have kept writing at all. And that I definitely wouldn't have kept posting fic. So it really just took like a few initial like kind words to like kind of keep me going. And I think that's so important. It's so important to support like new writers and to like be encouraging of people who maybe are kind of at the beginning of their writing journeys.
Yes. Yes. That's where the community aspect comes in, yeah. Right? Where we have the power to give somebody that encouragement that's going to mean something to them. It only takes us a few minutes and the words are free to type out, you know, on the internet.
Yeah. Stuff. Oh, yeah.
But those words could stay with that person for the rest of their life.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Like it costs nothing to be kind, especially on the internet where you can just throw down a few words, you know, and totally change someone's life, which is great.
Exactly. Yes. Oh, I love how you put that. It costs nothing to be kind. So I'm so glad that you had that experience because it sounds like that encouraged you more, right? As you were like learning how to do all these things and trying to figure out like the whole writing thing, which you're right. There's a lot to it, especially when you're first just starting out and everything. Yeah. So you found fanfic.net and everything, which is super great because we were all on there, I think, at some point.
Right. Yeah, we were all there. And honestly, it hasn't changed in the last like 15 years.
It hasn't.
the fanfic.net that's there now is the same one that was there in like when I first joined in like 2008 or 9. And I was like, wow, props to you, fanfic.net, for not changing at all.
Yeah. Yeah. They haven't really changed the format, the logo, anything. It's just the same. So that is kind of funny to me.
for better or for worse, it's the exact same.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, how did you make it from fanfic.net to AO3?
So one of the writers who was supporting me on LiveJournal, I don't know if I'm saying her name right, but I think it's Xanthi, maybe. I'm not sure. But she had AO3 invites. Do you remember when AO3 was invite only?
I do. When it was first in beta?
Yes.
Yes.
When it was brand new. And then I kind of kept hearing murmurings on LiveJournal of like, oh, AO3, it's this new archive site. Like, we're going to, you know, people are like, they're like, certain people have been like invited to post their fics. And I was like, oh, what is AO3? Like, how do I get on there? And I think I could, like, you could read fic, but I don't think you could post without the invite.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was, because I was not writing fan fiction at that time. I was just reading it. So I didn't have an issue with the whole invite thing. I had heard about other people complaining about it. But, you know, as a reader, I could just go to the site and read whatever I wanted without having you know, create like an account or anything. But yeah, for the people who wanted to write and post and contribute, you had to have that invite. It's not like you could just sign up like you can now.
Right. It felt like it was some sort of like hidden underground club that like someone had to tell you about for you to get into. Otherwise, you wouldn't know. It was so funny. It felt almost like a country club.
Yes, knocking on the door of that speakeasy, being like,
let me basically. In. Yeah, can I get in? Then I'm like, what's the password? Be like, I don't know.
I'm on the list.
Right, yes. Yeah, exactly. And then finally I got one of these invites. Because I think people even had a limited number of invites to give out. They were really trying to limit how many people were coming on AO3. So once I got that invite, I made my account and then that's where I stayed. That's where I started posting everything. And I kind of moved away from fanfic.net. Forget why. I think I just preferred the interface of AO3 and like all their tags and how easy it was to search for stuff.
Oh man, it's so much easier to search for stuff like what you're really, really looking for. You know what I mean? Like, I did appreciate that they had basic things to search for on fanfic.net, like angst and hurt comfort, you know, like really basic stuff. But when you're looking for something really specific, like, you know, face sitting or, choking or something. I mean, you know, sorry. Yeah, everybody knows I'm weird. Okay, thanks, guys. But, you know, just as an example, if you wanted to find that shit on fanfic.net, first of all, you're not going to find it there. Second of all, like, really specific things that you're looking for, like, good luck. Good luck finding that on fanfic.net.
Right, yeah. Like, you wouldn't be able to find stuff. And then also, one thing I ran into is there was stuff that, like, I didn't want to read that I was running into. And I was like, oh, I wouldn't have read this had I known it contained, you know, 10 chapters of this particular thing, whatever it is.
Exactly. Right. So I can protect you, too, from all the stuff you're just like, I don't want to see that. Yeah.
Yeah. So AO3 had, there's a tag for everything on AO3, which is awesome.
Oh, yeah. And people are constantly creating new ones. There's a tag for everything. So you can get super hyper specific about what you're looking for. And that created like a monster out of me, I think, because, oh, man, like at my fingertips, all the crazy stuff I want to see. Mm-mm-mm.
Yep. Yep, you can just click on that tag and it's like, oh, here's, you know, 300 more fics of this weird thing I like. Awesome.
Yes, it's so great. It's so great for lots of different reasons, but I love that. So eventually, you know, I'm guessing, I mean, it sounds like you were hanging around in Sherlock spaces for a little while. And then obviously like Harry Potter and stuff, like how did that all happen?
Yeah, so I joined the Sherlock fandom, I want to say like 2013-ish, that maybe, or 14. That's kind of when I joined on Tumblr.
Yeah, okay.
And I think the fandom itself kind of existed since 2010. It was kind of a long-lived fandom, because, I mean, the show itself wasn't that long, but they only put an episode out, like, every other year or so. So people had a lot of time in between to talk about these episodes and, you know, speculate and all that. So that's when I joined Tumblr to be part of that fandom. And, yeah, the Sherlock fandom was interesting. there was a lot of enthusiasm in that fandom. A lot of like fan art and tons of fanfic was coming out of there. And some of the best stuff I've like ever read were Sherlock fics that were just huge, huge meaty fics that really get into, you know, the depths of the characters and their emotions. There was so much like Sherlock and John slash. There was a ton of it. And I read a lot of it and and yeah, it was good. And I put some out there and yeah, it was a fun fandom to be in. A little crazy at times, but fun. Yeah.
You know, it's funny that you say that some of the best fan fiction that you've ever read has come out of that, because like I do remember, you know, I read a lot of, you know, Sherlock stuff back in, I don't know, maybe 2014, 15, something like that. I forget, but I'm with you. Like amazing writers went to that fandom for a little while and produced some amazing stuff. So it's always super interesting to go back and be like, oh man, like there's so much to choose from if you were to go back now and just get into it now, you know. But I also heard, and I wasn't around for this, okay, because like I didn't join Tumblr till like 2021. Okay. So I wasn't around for all this stuff, but I did hear that there were some interesting dramas that happened in the Sherlock fandom back in the day and stuff. Were you around for any of that like weirdness, or did you just hear about it later? Or?
I think I just heard about it later. Like I remember people not really liking the last season and kind of not thinking. There were some people who like didn't really think like the last season was real and that it was all like kind of fake. And that was interesting. That was kind of when I was, I think, like exiting the fandom. Because at that point I was like, the first two seasons of Sherlock were really good. And then the third one, in my opinion, was like, okay. And then the fourth one was different.
Yeah. Things got a little weird and stuff there, but you know.
Yeah.
You know.
Right.
Oh my God. So were you in Harry Potter concurrently then with Sherlock, or did that come later?
No, Harry Potter. I joined Harry Potter in 2022.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I'm very recent in Harry Potter, which is interesting because, I mean, I was super into the books, like when I was younger. Like I read them. I read them all. I went to the midnight book releases. I saw the movies at midnight. But I never once like searched for fic, or I never sought out any kind of like fandom for Harry Potter. Yeah, just up until 2 years ago, which I then found like a massive horde of fanfic because of like 20 plus years of people, you know, loving on the series and creating content for it, creating, you know, fan art and fan works and tons of fanfic. So when I went back to it and kind of peeks through that door, I was like, oh, wow, there's a lot here to explore.
Yes. So I'm so curious, like, what did make you peek through that door? Do you remember?
You know, I think I was maybe because I had been out of Sherlock, and I think I was just kind of looking for something else to get into. And, like, nothing that was being created, like, in that moment was, like, really catching my eye. And I thought, oh, yeah, like, Harry Potter. Like, that was the thing that I was into. Like, what's going on there? Like, I just sort of, it just kind of like a light bulb lit up.
Oh, and then I get it.
Just,
okay.
Yeah, I was just kind of like searching for something new to get into. And I mean, I've always liked like fantasy and sword and sorcery and all that stuff. So like, let's check out Harry Potter. And then I found it and I was like, oh, wow, there's a lot of cool stuff here. So I just kind of, that's where I've been staying for the last couple of years.
Oh, my God. That's so interesting to me that you did have, you know, exposure to it when you were very young, right? The way lots of us had exposure.
Sure.
But then you didn't get into the actual fandom side till pretty recently. Cause yeah, there are so many, like, I don't know, the body of work fan fiction that exists tagged for Harry Potter is like, at this point, I'm not sure that any one person would be able to get through it all, honestly, if they tried.
No.
Cause there's just so much. But you have the benefit, though, of being able to come in and just having tons of stuff to go through and choose from. And that can be super cool.
It was. Yeah, it was really cool because I think I didn't realize like how much stuff people had been producing all this time that like I had been away from it. Just because, you know, after I read the last book, I was kind of like, OK, you know, it was good. It was enjoyable. But I had no interest in like the fandom side of it until I came back to it. And then there was so much stuff.
You're like, everything I missed. Oh my God.
Right. Yeah, exactly. It's like almost overwhelming. Like, where do I start?
Exactly. Where would you even start? Like, that's crazy. That's crazy, but also kind of cool. It's funny when I encounter a fandom that I really like and I end up getting into it. And 9 times out of 10, I'm the one that's the last person to the party, you know? So I'm getting into it way after everybody else did. And on the one hand, it is super cool to be able to just go through a big body of work and start from the beginning. And, you know, you have tons of things to read and it's super cool. But then the other thing is, oh, like I missed the party, you know, like I missed when all of these things were actually happening. And that's kind of sad. So there's benefits to it and there's sad things to it. But definitely it's not one of those fandoms that's dead by any means. So
no.
There are still tons of stuff going on in Harry Potter world and everything. I want to switch gears here for just a second. I really love just hearing people's general thoughts on fan fiction, because fan fiction, when you think about it, there's so much to it, right? That there's so many things you could say about it. And I'm always so fascinated by the things that people have to say about it. So I was wondering, like, if you were given the opportunity to do like a 3-minute TED talk about why you love fan fiction or why fan fiction is important to you, what would you want people to know?
Yeah, this is such a good question. There's a few things. So I love fan fiction because there's no rules and there's no boundaries. Like, anybody can write about anything and no one can really tell them no. I mean, for better or for worse, no one can tell you that you can't write this story. You can think of any story and put it on the internet, or not, if you don't want to. You can write just for you. You can write something and stick it in a drawer and never look at it again, which is also amazing. There's no editors, there's no publishers, no one's really thinking about the marketability of it all or whether or not you can, you know, make a living doing it. So many hobbies are encouraged to be monetized and so many things cost money, but like fan fiction doesn't, and there's not even really pressure from other people within the community to like you know, publish your work or become a published writer. Everyone just kind of appreciates it for what it is, which I love. Another thing, I also think it's almost like, it's kind of like radical to write fan fiction. Like, you're presented with canon and the publishing companies, the film studios, whatever. They're like, okay, here's a story. Here's what happens. Here's how it ends. And to that, fanfic is like, well, actually, like, we, and, you know, and like,
yes.
Yeah. And the writers, you know, we take these stories, we turn them over, we pull them apart, we loosen up those threads, we look into the corners, we look behind the curtain, and then we can take like what we find or what we don't find and kind of turn it into something new. We can take a look or a gesture or a throwaway line from this, or from the canon, and just like spawn, you know, a 200,000 word fic from it and create something new. So there's this cool like undercurrent of rebellion in fandom. Like, people aren't really passively consuming the stories they're given, but like fic writers and readers are taking control of the stories that are told to them. They're transforming them, and then they're like speaking back to the source material in like their own language. So it's cool. Yeah, there's like this dialogue between the consumers, like between the fandom and the stories themselves, which I think is very cool.
Oh my God. Okay. I just love with everything that you just said there. That just washed over me like this waterfall of happiness. Like, I love this. I love it. Because, like, yes, it's radical. Yes, it is. Because, like, we've decentralized storytelling is essentially what we've done. Because we have taken the power away from anybody who can tell us no. And, like, I love what you said about, like, it's a funny thing, right? When you present something to somebody as a piece of canon art, whether it's a movie or a book or whatever it is. And it's interesting to me how there are those people that just accept it as it is. And they're like, oh, yeah, that's the story. Oh, well, you know? And then there are groups of people that will like think about it a little bit more and maybe have some beef with some of the parts of the story, right? Like, what they'll do is they'll sit around the table and they'll get really mad and they'll eat potato chips and they'll talk with their friends about like you know, and like I do that sometimes, like I'm not gonna lie, like, you know, we all do it, right? But what fascinates me is what you just said about how fan fiction writers, like, we take it a step further than that, because not only are we like, well, actually, and then we have all of these things to say, we're the masters of backtalk here, because like we just have to have the last word, right?
Yes. Yes, exactly.
Yes. And so, yeah, you're right. We are backtalking to these things that are presented to us in its own language of storytelling and creativity and just being like, oh, what do you think about this? Here's a conversation. Exactly. You know?
Right. It's like, yeah, it's like, how about on the other hand, this doesn't happen that way.
Yes. Yes. It's just, it's so interesting to me at the different ways that people take their dissatisfaction and what they do with that. Because I think it's one thing to just let it fester inside of you. And it's one thing to just get bitter about it and tell everyone, you know, how upset you are about, you know, what happened with the last Star Wars movie or blah, 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 blah. It's one thing to do that, but it's a whole nother thing to just be like, oh, well, I'll just fix it. I'll just fix it myself.
Yeah, it's like, give me the pen. I'll change it.
Yes. Yes. Like, there's something beautiful about that, that there are people out there who are like, I'm not going to sit here and let myself get bitter about this. I'm just going to fix it. I'm going to do it myself.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly,
like, there's something so punk about that, right? I'm going to do
there
it myself.
I love it. Yeah. It's like, I got to, it's like, you see something you don't like or you don't agree with, and you're like, well, now I got to roll up my sleeves and fix this.
Yes. Yes. And there's just something so badass about that. And it's one of the things that I will never get tired of. Y'all are just not passively sitting there growing bitter about the things that, you know, you didn't like. Y'all are just like, oh, let me fix it, you know, and let's all have a conversation, you know, and it's just, it's beautiful.
Exactly. It is. I love it. Yeah. So the fic writers are out there fixing everything and we're having fun doing it. That's another thing. Fan fiction is such fun. Like, it feels like playing. I mean, writing is hard work. Writing is, you know, you sit there and you're typing out on a computer and that can feel like work some days, but other days it's like it sort of feels like you're almost playing with like dolls again.
Yeah.
Like, you walk into someone's crafted world with all their crafted characters and then you pick them up and you start playing. And that's such fun. I mean, it's a challenge, but it's also joyful. And I think it's easy to lose sight of, like, the joy that kind of writing can bring, because it's tough, but it's also incredible like that.
Oh, and I love that you would bring up the joy side of it, because I think you're right. I think a lot of times we get caught up in this idea that, like, oh, writing is so hard and writing is a lot of work. And it is. That's the thing.
Sure,
like, you're
yeah.
right. It is. Right. And it can be lonely. It can be isolating and frustrating sometimes when we're I don't know what to do. You know, all of these things. But like the idea that you're doing it because you get joy out of it. Ultimately, it's this experience that, I don't know, some people, I don't know what I'm trying to say here, but like some people equate the experience almost to like meeting God, almost like a religious experience of like, oh, I'm out here, you know, like exploring myself, exploring the universe, exploring what it means to be human and having so much fun doing it, you know, this transcendent,
yeah.
like something or other. It's just very interesting how it's talked about. But I love that you bring up the joy aspect because like, why would we even do any of this, right? If there wasn't
right.
that deep love and that joy out of it. And I love that it's something that people can enjoy. They should. We need more joy.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, no, I totally agree. We definitely need more joy and more happiness in the world. And if my writing can bring happiness to even one person, then I feel like I've succeeded as a writer.
Yes. Yes. I think that's the other thing that's so beautiful about fan fiction writers is not only are you guys having the time of your lives creating all of this amazing stuff, but then you put it out into the world, you share it, and you are contributing to more joy in the world that didn't exist before. You did that. How amazing is that?
Yeah, that's so cool. It feels like a superpower.
Yes, it is. It is that you have the power and ability to increase joy in the world, make joy that wasn't there before for somebody else. One of the things that just gets me about the fan fiction community at large is like, we're always willing to share stuff and to just give it away. We don't want money out of it. We don't want this or that. We want to share, you know, and so it's so freely given. When I step back and I count the moments of joy I have felt in my life because of fan fiction, like, can you imagine, like, if I had all of those fan fiction writers sitting in a room together, all of the ones that have ever given me even like a mediocre moment of joy in my life, like how many people I could fill a room with, you know, like how amazing is that? Amazing.
Awesome.
And we're all doing
yeah.
that for each other. It just it makes the world go round, man. I could talk about it for 1,000 years.
I know. Yeah, I love it. That's one of the things I love about fandom is that everybody is kind of each other's audience and like creator. So it's just kind of like this circle of reading and writing and compliments and joy and kindness. And I love that.
Yes, it's this beautiful ecosystem that
yeah.
I'll never get tired of. So I'm so glad that we're both here. So I was wondering about your love for Severitis, because I know that you were talking earlier about getting into the Harry Potter fandom and how that's kind of a recent development for you. Did you start off with Severitis when you first got into Harry Potter, or was that something that you kind of had to maneuver around to? Like, I'm just kind of curious how that happened.
That definitely was not something I started with, because I didn't know it existed. I just, yeah, when I started reading, I was just kind of like, there wasn't really like a particular pairing I was looking for, or like a particular, I should say, I guess there were certain tropes that I liked that I've kind of held on to, so just sort of throughout all my fandom reading and writing. So I think I just sort of searched for specific tropes and then just sort of read the stories that came up. And then I found Severitis and I was like, oh, wow. Like, Harry and Snape, what? Like, what? Like, putting them together? That's got to be... Because, you know, and obviously in canon, like, you know, they don't like each other at all. So putting them together in Severitis was just, like, such a strange concept to me. Because I should say, actually, I found Snary first. That's what happened.
Oh, yes.
Because Snary's much bigger than Severitis. I should say what Severitis is. So Severitis is... The trope of Severitis is that Snape is Harry's biological father. That's how it started. And the reason it's called Severitis is it's actually named after a user who kind of posted this prompt somewhere, like, oh, write a story where, you know, Snape is Harry's father. And then it sort of evolved from there to kind of become the trope called Severitis. And it sort of includes any fic where Snape is any, like, his father, but also, like, an authority figure, a guardian figure, just any kind of, like, mentor or guide for Harry. So it's not limited to, like, the biological father quite as much. Yeah, I found Snary first, and I was like, oh, like, this is interesting. And I did read a couple, but there was something about it that just didn't quite work for me. And I think it was, the romance aspect just wasn't really... It wasn't really clicking. I was like, I don't love them together, like, you know, sexually. But then I discovered Severitus, which is them together in, like, a platonic, like, non-romantic way. And I was hooked. Definitely. Yeah. And I think that's...
Oh, and that's where it clicked for you.
Yep. And then I've lived in there ever since.
Well, and yeah, like, the whole thing has always fascinated me. I was thinking about it today, like, oh, that is so interesting that Snary and Severitus are like neighbors, you know, like, they're so close,
yeah,
right, to each other, but they just have these little things that are different. But I think that we definitely have great understanding for one another, right? Because we can sort of get it in different
right.
ways that maybe others may find baffling. I actually wanted to ask you about things people find baffling. And of course, I'm coming at this from Severus Snape's perspective because, like, you know, that's my guy and everything. But I was interested in your thoughts on Snape just really quick, just because, like, he is a controversial, you know, character. What would you say to those baffled people, right? When you're, like, thinking about the reasons why that element of Severus Snape and the Severitus is interesting to you, what would you say?
I mean, I see why he's controversial. Like, I get why people don't like him. Like, I get it. Like, Snape, he's, you know, he's bitter, he's sarcastic, he can be, like, really cruel. I mean, he's also, like, smart as hell and super witty. He's like a bit of a dick. However, there's two things to keep in mind with Snape. Like, when in canon, like in the books, a lot of what we see of him is very much filtered, like, through Harry and, like, the child's, like, point of view. He's described as, like, ugly and greasy and, you know, not even pale, but sallow. And I think like a lot of kids would probably describe, like, their least favorite teacher in not so nice ways. So there's sort of that filter of, like, dislike that we're already seeing
yes.
him through.
Right.
So there's that point to keep in mind. And then also, I think, I mean, Snape is under a lot of stress during the whole canon. I mean, he's a spy for Dumbledore and Voldemort, and both of these are, like, really powerful dudes. I think he doesn't really like teaching. He just kind of fell into it because Dumbledore put him there.
Hates it. Yeah, he hates it.
Yeah, he was put there because, like, Dumbledore sort of needed him to be, like, A, safe, and B, like, accessible because he's a spy. So I think, I mean, he's just not in a great position in canon. Like, we're definitely not seeing him at his best.
Yeah, definitely not thriving, let's say.
No, definitely not. Yeah, so I was like, okay, I think that's something to keep in mind with him. And I think, too, like, he wasn't really born this way. He wasn't, like, bitter and sarcastic and cynical kind of, like, out of the womb, I think. I think he had the potential to be, like, a good person and a kind person, but I think life just, like, crapped on him repeatedly, and then what we see is the result.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, it's kind of interesting. When you look at the parallels, I think, at least between, like, Snape's background, his childhood, and the one that Harry had, there's a lot of similarities there. But I do feel like, ultimately, maybe Harry had some things that Snape didn't. You know, he had some support from adult teachers, you know, and he had friends who were, like, good people who were there to support him. I mean, I just feel like maybe Harry had more, I don't know, social support.
Oh, definitely.
Of a positive nature.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I think, like, Harry and Snape together on the page, I mean, I think, like, something, like, electric happens when they're on the page together. There's, like, an energy. Something, like, there's just, like, if you put these two characters together, like, things are just gonna start happening. And not every character pairing is like that. And I don't know what it is about these two, but there's something about them. Like, and they do, like, Harry and Snape, they do have a lot of similarities.
Yeah.
I mean, they, like, both of them had crappy childhoods, and they both had relatives who dislike magic. They both found, like, a sanctuary in going to Hogwarts. They both loved Lily. They're both half-blood and grew up, you know, in a muggle environment. I mean, they're just, I could go on, but there's a lot of similarities there, but they're very different people.
Yes, it is interesting, right? When you like, I don't know, mathematically break it down to like, oh, there's these similarities, but there's also lots of things that are different. And it's like a molecular compound sort of spark on the page or something, some sort of, you know, it feels like doing a chemistry experiment almost when you put them in a room together, because yeah, you're right. Something's going to spark up because like these two just can't help themselves.
It's so true. It's so they great. Can't. Yeah. That's why they're great to read and write about, because there's just this energy between them.
Yeah. Right. So I can absolutely see why, like, you know, the Severitis thing would have just kind of lit your brain on fire.
Yeah, definitely.
So much potential here. Oh, my gosh.
Sure.
Let's talk about your fic, The Drought of Asphodel. I loved this fic. This was so interesting to me. And I had a lot of fun reading it. Yeah. So I was hoping that you could briefly tell us what it's about. And then I want to know what inspired you to write it.
Sure. Yeah. So the basic plot of this Draft of Asphodel is that Harry, the night before school starts in his fifth year, he accidentally drinks an evil potion that he gets from Mundungus Fletcher. And we find out later that this potion is one half of a two-part potion that was originally intended to be used as a way to, like, control, enslave, or imprison people. So the other half of this potion that Harry drinks is meant to be consumed by another person who will essentially be in charge of that other person. So there's, like, the servant half of the potion that Harry drinks, and then it's decided in the story that Snape is going to drink, like, the master half of the potion. So during the course of the fic, given the rules of the potion, Snape has to, like, repeatedly hurt and hit Harry in order to keep him alive, because otherwise the potion that Harry drank will kill him. Which, now that I'm saying it all like that, it sounds kind of fucked up, but...
Well, that's just how the potion is written up, right? Like, the potion is sort of demanding that this happen, because, of course, like you said, the whole point of the potion was to control somebody. So if they're, you know, not being controlled or whatever, the potion's going to demand that something happen to fix that, because that's the whole point of it. But it does put them in, like, a weird situation.
It definitely puts them in very weird, awkward, uncomfortable situations.
And, yes.
It makes them, like, face each other, and it makes them kind of come to terms with things that they would rather not come to terms with. Sort of Snape especially, where he kind of dips into his own kind of messed up childhood after all these encounters with Harry, and it sort of forces him to revisit these rising ghosts that he thought he had buried, just in terms of his own, like, childhood, like, abuse and stuff.
Yeah.
So a lot of it touches a lot on all of my, like, favorite tropes, which, like, angst, power dynamics, hurt, comfort, corporal punishment, friendship, found family. Yeah, like, this fic was super self-indulgent.
All your faves came to dinner with this one, right?
Pretty much, yeah. I think I just, like, made a list of, like, all the tropes I really liked, and I was like, okay, how can I write a fic with these?
Oh my god, no, you did a wonderful job, though, like, piecing all of those different things together, right? And just being like, oh, and you put it together in this really cohesive story. It was just really, really interesting. So it sounds like you just kind of wanted to put all of your favorite things together. And that's what inspired the whole, like, desire to to write it. Was it for any kind of, like, challenge or, like, fest or anything? Or
no. Not really. I was going through some rough stuff in my life at the time, and I needed something to, like, focus on. I needed something that wasn't reality to sort of, you know, find, like, comfort in, I guess. So that's why I was like, okay, I'm going to write me a super indulgent fic with all the weird shit I like, and I don't care what anybody says.
No, good.
Yeah. And, like, I mean, I've always gone to writing, like, when times are tough, and it's always been helpful. So I was like, well, why? Like, this isn't going to be any different. So then I just happened to write this story, and I wrote it. Draft of Asphodel, this really just, like, fell out of me. I went to work, and then I came home and I wrote. I was almost like a machine that I worked on this. Yeah, it was one of those, like, weird, like, semi-religious experiences where the story just, like, happens, and you don't really need to do, like, any work for it. Like, that hardly ever happens, but when it does, it's weird. But cool.
That is so funny that you say that, because the episode that I just dropped, I think last week, that was with Insomniac Writer 17. And the fan fiction we were discussing with her episode, she was saying the exact same thing. It just fell out of her. She has no idea how it happened. Like, it was like a channeling experience almost, where she was just there to type things out on the computer, but the story just wrote itself. And she's like, I've never in my whole life like had that before or since. Is this something that's happened to you before, with the whole story falling out of you like that? Or was this kind of like a once in a blue moon kind of a thing?
This is probably the second time this has happened. There was another fic I had for the Sherlock fandom called Home Sweet Holmes. Holmes, like a play on words, like Sherlock Holmes. And it was just an AU where, like, John and Sherlock are kids, and they meet in, like, Sherlock's house, and it wasn't really, it's definitely not one of my more popular stories. I mean, people liked it well enough, but that was another one that I wrote, like, really fast. And, I mean, I was writing that one, like, probably 8 or 10 hours a day, and then it just kind of fell out of me. And then, like, with this one, with this Asphodel fic, it was, I think I wrote it in 3 weeks.
Oh, wow, really?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Yeah, you've got 18 chapters, if I am recalling correctly. So 18 chapters in 3 weeks.
Yeah, I think it's 16, but it's about 70,000 words.
Oh, got it.
Give or take.
Got it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I just remember, like, yeah, it took me a couple days to get through it and stuff.
Yeah.
Well, I had to chop it up, you know, because
sure,
my boss doesn't like me reading fan fiction at work. Like,
the nerve.
the nerve. Like, oh my God. Yeah. So, but that's amazing. In 3 weeks. So, wow. Were there any parts then of the writing process that felt like a struggle to you, or was it all just like pretty easy sailing as far as getting it out?
It was pretty easy sailing. Like, there wasn't really writer's block. I mean, yeah, it just kind of came out like all at once. I just wrote through it, and it formed on the page. Just, I mean, honestly, even what's on AO3 is like very close to the first draft.
Oh, really?
Like, some of those chapters aren't edited at all. I mean, in hindsight, I definitely probably would change some things, but at the time, I was pretty happy with it at the time, and I still am. Yeah, so that was unusual too, that the lack of intense editing. I usually have to go over things a few times and just, you know, reword sections, remove sections, whatever. But with this, this was weird. This one was unusual in that it kind of came out like almost like fully formed.
Oh, and that must just feel like magic when that
it
happens.
It did, you know? Yeah. Yeah, it felt like magic. And I was like, oh, and it's my first Harry Potter fic. So it kind of...
The irony.
Yeah, right?
That's so cool, though. That's so cool. At least once in my lifetime, I'd love to have an experience like that. I don't write fan fiction as often as other people do. So, but I just think that having that type of experience would be fascinating. I'm just enthralled by people who have had that happen to them. I did want to ask you about one of the tropes that this story has, because, you know, obviously, with you explaining, you know, the premise of the story and the premise of the potion that is the center of the story, obviously we have lots of instances in this story where Snape has no choice but to deal out corporal punishment, right? Like, that's just a thing that has to happen so that Harry doesn't die. And I totally understood, right, from a logical perspective, like, yeah, that makes so much sense. Cool. And then I read in your AO3 profile that corporal punishment, or CP, as it is sometimes called, is something that, you know, you mentioned it amongst some of your favorite tropes. And I thought, oh, that's interesting. So I just kind of wanted to ask you about that just a little bit, because I don't think we've ever really addressed that particular trope here on the show. And I was just wondering, like, is it like the hurt comfort element that is compelling to you, or are there other parts of that particular trope that are interesting? I'm just so curious about that.
Yeah, I mean, definitely, like, for this fic, it's like the hurt comfort. Like, I would say that, like, corporal punishment is like a subset of like the hurt comfort trope. And it seems like most fandoms have at least like at least one or two fics that deal with this particular trope and these like power dynamics between the two characters. And it seems like it's one of those things, like, you either like it or you don't. You know, like, for some people, it's super squicky, and I totally get that. Like, I absolutely get that it's not everybody's cup of tea to, like, read about, like, one character whacking another character. Like, that that totally makes sense. Yeah, like, it's hard to explain, but it's kind of like I said, you're either into it or you're not.
Yeah, and you know, some tropes are like that. I definitely have tropes in my little quiver of, like, you know, tropes that I am well aware you either love it or you hate it. And sometimes we can't even, like, adequately explain, not even to ourselves sometimes, like, why do I like this? What is this about, you know? But I'm constantly fascinated by it, you know, because people love different things and they should. They should love different things. Like,
yeah,
you know?
I think... Yeah, it's sort of like, because I really like the tropes of angst and power dynamics and hurt, comfort, and friendship and found family.
Okay.
And this sort of like corporal punishment sort of encompasses all of those things.
Yes. So it's like a triumvirate trope where it just kind of takes these three things that you really love and smashes them together in this really satisfying way.
Yeah, pretty much. Exactly.
Oh, that makes so much sense.
Yeah.
Yes, yes. No, I can see that. I can see that. You know what I was wondering, too, is because I know that Severitis, obviously, like, these are stories where Snape is in the position of being a parental figure or a mentor or something of that sort, that nature, right? So I feel like these types of stories for Severitis do inherently have that power dynamic element to them just by nature and everything.
Right.
So I was kind of just wondering, as I was thinking about this whole CP thing, is corporal punishment, like, is that something that would be more common in Severitis? Or is that still something that's, like, not as common, actually?
Yeah, I don't think that's still not as common. I mean, it's out there within Severitis, but it's definitely not. It's certainly not, like, a core tenet of the of Severitis trope, no.
Oh, okay. No, I was just wondering, yeah, because of the power dynamic thing kind of inherently built into the Severitis trope.
Yeah, and like that's how I saw it.
Right.
But that's definitely not how, like, I would say, like, most people see it.
Yeah. Well, and you know, I really appreciated the way that you used the CP trope in this story. Because, you know, when you were talking about the story earlier, you were mentioning that not only were you telling us this story from Harry's perspective, obviously, like, maybe not so fun to get whacked all the time, you know? I don't think it's something he enjoyed exactly.
No.
He understood on a certain level, right, that this is necessary because I don't want to die. So there was that. But you were also mentioning how you really did have to explore this also from Snape's perspective as well. And I just wanted to tell you that I really appreciated that, because there were a couple of things about that I found, like, incredibly authentic and real.
Oh, good.
So I'm not a parent, right? I chose not to have kids for a reason, because there has always been part of me that has been terrified of becoming my parents. And I didn't want to do that to somebody else. So, like, in this lifetime, I've decided, like, no kids for me. You put that element in the story where Snape is, like, you know, having to carry out these punishments for Harry. And in the course of doing that, he's getting, like, majorly triggered here, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Because suddenly he's remembering all of these instances from his own childhood when his father was doing those things to him. And he is, like, internally horrified by this, because at some point, I think he probably would have said to himself, I don't want to be my father. I don't want to become my father. And then here he is, 20 years later, in his office, alone with Harry, like, doing the same things to Harry that his father did to him. And that horrible feeling in the pit of his stomach he must have felt to sit there and have to say to himself, well, there it is. Now I've just become my father. The thing he was probably so afraid of for the last who knows how many years. And I felt that. I felt that so deeply because, like, yes, I too have had those horrifying, like, fears of becoming the things I don't want to become. And I felt, like, so, oh, Oh my God. So anyway, you did a tremendous job with that. I thought that was amazing.
Thank you. That's awesome. Yeah, I'm so glad to hear you say that, because I really tried to make it authentic, and I really wanted to make their encounters be like horrible for both of them for different reasons. Like Harry, because he's, you know, in pain and in turmoil, and Snape because he's in like emotional pain and turmoil. You got to get that angst in there, you know? And
yes, and you did. You totally did. Like the angst from both sides was just tremendous. Because yeah, I mean, you know, of course, from Harry's perspective, like this is horrible. Can you imagine the teacher that you hate the most, that you're convinced hates you and wants to see you dead, all of a sudden, like that teacher has this immense power over you?
Uh-huh.
You know, like,
ugh. Yeah. Awful. Terrible.
That's so awful. Yes. Yes. That would just be a nightmare. Like from, you know, how old is he here? 15, 16?
Yeah, like 15.
15. Yeah. So from a 15-year-old's perspective, that's like the most horrible thing that could possibly ever happen to
Sure. you. Yeah. And it's terrible for both of them. And I was like, I mean, the only way that they're really going to kind of get through it is to sort of start seeing eye to eye. Because I wanted it by the end for them to be like and far better terms than they were at the beginning. So I made it so that he ended up like eventually apologizing to Harry, and sort of like Snape had to like face his past. And at one point, I think it was in chapter 8, where he kind of loses control a bit, and he really feels like his father at the end of that chapter. That's kind of like the height of it. And then the turning point comes in the following chapter when he decides to be better, and he decides to not do what his father did. And that's kind of the switch where him and Harry develop a better relationship.
Yes. Yes. And I thought that that was so great that you gave them space to do that. Obviously I can relate to the fear of like becoming, you know, my parents and everything.
Sure.
And so there's Snape with that same fear. But it's interesting to me, the point where you end up continuing the cycle is that point where you make the decision to like go down the same path and handle things in the exact same way that your parents did. And I love that you gave Snape that turning point opportunity, right? You gave him this point where he could either ignore the whole horrible mess that happened in chapter 8, and he could just feel sorry for it inside and then never admit that he was wrong or never apologize to Harry for it. He could absolutely do that and continue the cycle. And that would be easier, right?
Definitely. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So much easier. But he chooses not to do that. He chooses to do the hard thing, which is like, I don't know. In my opinion, that's like one of the bravest things that you can do. Going against the cycle, even if it is the most uncomfortable thing you could possibly think of, you know? So yeah, he chooses to do the hard thing and he apologizes to Harry. And that must have taken a lot of like bravery on his part. But I feel like they both handled it really well, because Harry didn't have to accept that apology either.
That's true. Yeah, he didn't. I think when once Snape apologizes and once he kind of mentions that like he had a really crap childhood in that apology. And then Harry, who also had a crap childhood, kind of immediately relates. Because, I mean, Harry, you know, Harry's a good person. He's very compassionate. He has a good heart. So I think as soon as he heard that Snape, like, who is this like scourge of his school life, as soon as he hears that, like, maybe he had a similar background as Harry, I think Harry's just kind of like, oh, like, dang, that sucks that happened to you. And then they sort of like begin to have that kind of common ground. Like, yeah, we're both dealing with this horrible potion that sucks, that we both hate, but we're going to kind of deal with it together. Whereas in the first half of the fic, it was sort of Harry versus Snape. Now it's sort of Harry and Snape against the potion in the second half of the story.
Exactly. And I love how you had that laid out, because I feel like it really kind of goes to show you what can happen. You know, things can really change in a relationship when you make the conscious choice to handle things differently. Because if Snape had chosen just to keep his mouth shut, right, and not apologize and not have that heart to heart, you know, they could have kept going down that same path where they're antagonistic to each other and don't trust each other and blah, blah, blah. And that could have totally been it, you know. But I love how, like, because of the choice to handle things differently, right? And to do something different and not be like his father, it changes the whole outcome. Because suddenly, like, he's able to have the relationship with Harry now that he was never able to have with his own father.
Right, exactly.
It's just, it's amazing.
Right. Oh, thank you. Yeah, and I think when Snape apologized, I don't think he was thinking that, like, oh, I'm going to now have this great relationship with Harry.
No, yeah.
Which I explore further in the sequel that I'm currently posting that was unplanned. But I think he was just like, oh, I'm going to apologize because he just feels like it's the better thing to do. He never got that apology, you know? So it's almost like, in a way, he's apologizing, like, to himself, like, for his father's actions, you know?
Yes.
Like, there's sort of, and, like, I don't even think Snape realizes that, but that's kind of what I was thinking with it.
Yes, it was just like, that really got me, and I thought that that was so great that was in there. You know, the other thing that kind of got me just a little bit here, again, you did a really good job of showing how this whole scenario that you came up with for this fic, how it affected them both. And I was thinking this morning over coffee, like, man, isn't it interesting that even canon Snape, he was always asked to do these really hard, distasteful things for the greater good. And here he is again in your fic, like, once again, being asked to do something really hard and distasteful for the greater good, you know? And I know in canon, he addresses that briefly. You know, when he's talking to Dumbledore that one time and being like, well, what about my soul? You know, like,
yeah, right.
Kind of saying like, hey, these things have a psychological effect on me, guys.
Yeah.
You know, and so I loved how like hopeful you made this fic, like where it ended up, because like I'm sure that this was like terribly traumatizing for the both of them, that they had to do this thing so that Harry wouldn't die, you know, and it has a resolution, you know, and everything with the potion. But I really appreciated that, like, you gave them this hopeful place, this hopeful path forward for the both of them, I think. And I really appreciated that.
Oh, good. Yeah, I always like to have a happy ending. I'm a big fan of angst with a happy ending. Like, I can definitely, like, read or watch characters, like, go through utter hell, but as long as I know that it's kind of going to be, like, okay at the end, that kind of makes it all worth it, almost.
Right. Oh, for sure.
Yeah, so I wanted them to sort of end up in, like, the most positive place they could be in after, like, despite all the terrible stuff that they have to do together. And, yeah, it's sort of like their, like, relationship sort of, like, forms in this crucible of both of them are in, like, pain.
Right.
The whole time, you know, both of them are in like varying amounts and types of pain. And then kind of like the end of it is that they sort of both come out okay and even better, I would say, than how they started.
Yeah, I would say too. I mean, definitely you could tell that Harry really wanted that mentor type connection with his teacher to continue even after the whole potion thing gets resolved. But, you know, I got the feeling that on Snape's end, too, like there was something meaningful for him there, too, you know. So it was really, really cool to just kind of see the two of them. It was really sweet the way that you had Snape handle that at the end, I think, giving Harry the opportunity to reach out over summer break if he needed to, if he wanted to, you know, like offering that support to him so that he would have that in his back pocket. And I was like, oh, Snape.
I know. It was like Snape sort of like found a heart in this story. He sort of shed some of his bitterness. And I'm sure some people probably won't like that. But yeah, I made him a little bit softer on the edges, a little less snappy, a little at least towards Harry.
Some of us like to see that sometimes. Some of I know I do, you know, like I love my bitter, acerbic Snape, but I also love the stories where he softens up a little bit and, you know, like,
yeah,
it's all good to me, you know.
Right. So, yeah, I really wanted them to just like be more comfortable with each other. And they're both kind of they're in a place where they can kind of give each other what the other needs, which I like.
Yes, definitely. Like, it's very cool to see them both be able to reach that place with each other. And I know that you've got a sequel that you're working on right
now. Yes. Yeah.
As you were writing the first fic for the series, though, as it was all kind of falling out from you, as you were describing earlier, were there any, like, surprises along the way for you as far as where the fic went? Were you intending it to end exactly where it did, or was there anything that surprised you?
I mean, yeah, I was thinking about this question, and not really. I mean, I think the biggest surprise, well, I shouldn't say that. The biggest surprise is probably kind of first, how fast it flowed once I started. I had an extremely basic idea. It was just the idea for the potion at the beginning, and then I knew how I wanted it to end, and the middle just kind of filled itself, which was great. And then I also think it's interesting how, looking back at it now, 2 years later, so many of the comments that I get on this fic are people saying just how comforting it is and how they reread it and how it, you know, always gives them the warm and fuzzies. And for such a fic with such kind of messed up tropes in it, with all the corporal punishment and all the, you know, the potion that demands such terrible things, and they're, like you were saying, Snape's triggers and stuff. And I just think it's cool that this thing that I created to kind of comfort myself during a turbulent time also ended up comforting other people. So that's nice, that comfort really came through, which I find interesting.
Yes. That energy is just kind of there, resonant in the fic. And yeah, it's totally there for people to come back to over and over. And that is really cool that, you know, something that was able to bring you meaning and comfort was able to do the same thing for other people, which, you know, again, just fascinates me to no end that we have that ability to do that for other people. Really? Oh my God. That's such great news, right?
Yeah. I love when the things that I can write give people some sort of either comfort or peace or something. I mean, I feel like I've made it as a writer when that happens.
Oh, absolutely. And that's why I'm constantly saying that it matters. It matters what you guys write. It does. Because look what you're doing. You're comforting other people and you're giving them something that they didn't have before. And maybe you're making it so that they have a better day than they had because, you know, we all have our bad days, right?
Sure,
sometimes
yeah.
We need our comfort fix to get through whatever
yeah.
We're trying to get through, you know? And so that you guys have the power to positively impact other people with the things that you're writing. Of course it matters, right? Of course it matters. Oh my God. Okay. All right, before I go off on a tangent there, I was wondering also, what parts of the fic mean the most to you and why?
I would say I like the quieter moments where Harry and Snape kind of spend time together, mostly in the latter half of the fic, where, Harry's more comfortable, in his presence, and Snape is, actively trying to be, less explosive towards Harry. I think chapter 9 is probably my favorite chapter because that's really the turning point in their relationship when he apologizes for his actions during their clemency lesson. He says he's going to try to do better, and then he does. So I like when people try to do better or when they kind of they're given a second chance and when they give themselves a second chance and how they both kind of found each other in a way. They're both misfits who sort of found each other, you know what I mean? They fit together really well because Harry badly needs some adult that he can trust because he hasn't really been able to trust many adults in his life. His aunt and uncle suck. His parents are gone. Lupin was never really part of his life. Sirius wasn't really part of his life. He never really had the opportunity to be genuinely close to an adult that cared about him.
Yes, most of his interactions were pretty fleeting with these adults, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and Snape, you know, kind of conversely, he grew up in a poor environment. He joined the Death Eaters, and while we don't really know what he did for the Death Eaters, it was probably pretty violent there. You know, the woman he loved died, and I think this resulted in this kind of bitter, angry person, and being near Harry and repeatedly having this forced interaction, and they finally get to talking, and Snape realizes that, you know, he's in a position to kind of right some of the wrongs so far in Harry's life. And then Harry also sees that potential in him, which I think is just a really beautiful thing.
Yes, it's a dynamic that creates a lot of opportunity. And there's so much that you can do with that.
Yes.
In all the years that you've been writing fan fiction, what do you feel like you've learned about yourself?
I would say fan fiction in general, it gave me self-confidence. I wanted to get good at writing like way back when I first started writing, and I wanted to improve my writing skill. And a fan fiction was a good way to do that, because, I mean, I was able to, you know, hone my skills and then get feedback like pretty instantly. So people leaving comments helped a lot. And I was able to, you know, work at this writing thing and get better at it over the years. And it's like, oh, yeah, now it's a thing that I'm like, you know, decent at, pretty good at even. And so, yeah, I also learned with fanfic that it's okay to be self-indulgent every once in a while. Like, it's okay to kind of like treat yourself and to read the fics that, you know, maybe you wouldn't necessarily want to tell other people about, or read the fics that, you know, make you feel good, even if you can't really explain why. Just, you know, so that's what I learned.
Self-care. You're describing like self-care. It's like fandom exactly. Self-care, right?
Yep. Yeah.
Where you're like, I need this for me and I will create it. And if anyone else likes it, good for them. But,
right.
You for know, sure. I absolutely love that, right? Because like at the end of the day, sometimes we have to be the ones to create it. But the thing is that so many people out there are going to find it and going to love it. And, you know, you're not the only one, right, who needs it ultimately. But I love that idea of like self-care through fan fiction and things like that. Because, yeah, that's part of it, right?
It sure is.
Now, when you say confidence, do you feel like that confidence that you picked up from writing fan fiction, do you feel like that confidence has extended out to other parts of your life as well?
Yeah, probably. Maybe in ways that are hard to even pinpoint. But it's almost like if you excel in one thing, like if you're good at one thing and you're comfortable in one thing, I think that does kind of branch out into other aspects of your life, whether you realize it or not.
Yeah, one thing I think that's interesting about that is you already have this experience under your belt, right, of gaining confidence with fan fiction. And I feel like when we have an imperial experience under our belt that nobody can take away, we'll always be able to think back on that experience and be like, oh, well, I was able to do it here with fan fiction. I was able to work hard and I was able to, you know, improve my craft, improve my skill. And now I feel really confident. And so having at least one experience like that under your belt of being successful with something, I feel like that gives us confidence sometimes when we start going forward to do other new things in our lives because,
yeah,
you know?
No, that's true. Or even the things you learn from writing a story, you can sort of apply to other, you know, other parts of your life. Like if you're writing something and you get writer's block, you sort of just have to trust the process that it's going to unblock itself at some point. Something's going to twig in your mind. Something's going to make something shift and then you'll be able to keep going. So if in other aspects of your life you run into some sort of block, you can kind of be like, well, this will pass, like everything. And then like the writer's block passed, this will pass too, you know? So you can sort of apply some of the things you learn while writing to other aspects of your life.
I love that. I absolutely love that. I'm going to be thinking about that today after we get off this call. About like, yeah, the writer's block metaphor. That's going to be with me for days now. Like, oh, I love that. That's so cool. Thank you.
Awesome. Yeah, you're welcome.
I love it. So we are on our last question of the day, which is, are there any other fan fiction writers that you'd like to shout out on the podcast?
Yes. I would say everybody on the Potions and Snitches Discord server, Serena EW. Serena EW for encouraging me to be on this podcast.
Absolutely.
Yes. Jan AQ for running and creating the Potions and Snitches website, which is a Severitas devoted website where it's just all Harry and Snape genfic. And I don't know if I'm saying this name right, but Xanthi, who was a huge supporter during my live journal days and who was very encouraging of my shoddy first attempts at writing, and she's probably the reason I kept writing fic. Victorian Chick wrote a series called A Time and Place. These were like the gateway fics that really got me into Severitas. And finally, I want to thank C.S. Cooper 90, who has been amazingly supportive of this draft of Asphodel fic and the sequel I'm currently posting. She's been a wonderful friend and a steadfast cheerleader of the series. I'm very grateful we connected, and my writing is absolutely better because of our friendship. And if you liked Draft of Asphodel, you should definitely check out her fic. It's a work in progress called Discipline and Redemption, Snape's Guiding Hand.
That sounds intriguing.
Yeah, that's a good one. You should check that one out.
That's awesome. Perfect. Thank you for those shout outs. We'll make sure to get links where we can up on the show notes so folks can check those out. Tea Time 42. This has been so much fun today. Thank you so much for coming on and talking with me.
You're welcome. Yeah, thanks for having me. This is a blast.
Absolutely. The pleasure was absolutely all mine. Thank you again. Check out her stories on AO3 and give her some love. You can find the Fanfic Maverick online at fanficmaverickpodcast.com, on Tumblr at Fanfic Maverick Podcast, on Instagram and Twitter at Fanfic Maverick, and I can always be reached at fanficmaverick@gmail.com. Thank you all so much for listening. Don't forget to subscribe, and I will see you next episode. In the meantime, keep on rolling.